content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, Boutique Boom. A wave of amenity-rich hotels are planting their flags in the Triangle. Before we get to the cover story, we'll read the biz section. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Rebound continues in Chapel Hill. Several businesses slammed by flooding in Chapel Hill in July are open again as the long recovery continues. Kippos Greek Taverna, part of Georgios Hospitality Group, reopened February 21st at the Eastgate Crossing Shopping Center, which bore a heavy brunt of the damage. Kippos opened for dinner service initially and will eventually ramp up more offerings. Wake Radiology had a soft opening in January and celebrated with a ribbon cutting recently. Others are still scrambling. Recently, workers were busy inside an empty Aldi at Eastgate. Nearby, the freestanding building that once housed a Starbucks remained empty. Wake Radiology was located nearby on South Estes Drive and acquired Raleigh Radiology space on Banks Drive on the northern side of town. Perul Galloway, the chief operating officer, said she had managed the Chapel Hill office for 25 years prior to moving to COO. "This was my fifth flood at that location," she said of the spot on South Estes Drive. "This one was quite impactful. The creek swelled when Tropical Storm Chantal roared through Chapel Hill in July. Despite having special doors to protect from flooding," Galloway said, "Wake Radiology still had about 6 to 10 inches of water. The problem is a lot of the large equipment pieces are at the ground level," she said. That included MRI and CT units, which each cost around $1 million. Galloway said getting enough flood insurance was difficult because of the persistent risk. "We were able to obtain some, but not enough to cover the full costs," Galloway said. Wake Radiology moved to 120 Banks Drive, Suite 110, and took over the Certificate of Need license from Raleigh Radiology. "It's a bigger space at around 10,000 square feet. We want to grow," Galloway said. Carolina North project expected to draw interest. UNC Chapel Hill has released a second request for proposals for Carolina North, with this one focused on placemaking for the new campus. UNC earlier released a request for qualifications for a firm to lead the design of the project. The firm picked to lead the design and planning for the campus will work with a developer to be selected later. But the new solicitation is more focused on helping to create an experience. The request states that UNC is, quote, soliciting submittals from qualified placemaking, urban experience, and creative strategy consultants to prepare a place strategy for Carolina North, unquote. Firms can submit bids for both the design and place strategy opportunities. As with the design phase, UNC is setting a fast pace and one that underscores the importance of Carolina North. The closing date for solicitations is March 13th. In Uptown Charlotte, penthouse of former Panther back on market. A Charlotte penthouse once owned by National Football League star Christian McCaffrey is back on the market in Charlotte. The Charlotte Business Journal reported that the penthouse unit in the Sky Condominiums at 222 South Caldwell Street is now listed at $3.35 million. McCaffrey, through an LLC, bought the condo in 2019 for $2 million when he played for the Carolina Panthers. After being traded to the San Francisco 49ers, he sold it for $3 million in 2023. Abigail Hines Miller, owner and managing partner of the agency Charlotte, told the newspaper that the seller lives in another state and does not use the condo as a primary residence. Speaking of real estate, a Raleigh home of former CEO sells for asking price. The Inside the Beltline home of a Raleigh entrepreneur who is moving to New Hampshire has sold for its asking price. John Replogle and his wife sold their home at 445 Drummond Drive on February 20th for $4.75 million. Replogle served as CEO of Burt's Bees from 2006 to 2011 before joining Seventh Generation in 2011. and then serving as a founding partner of One Better Ventures beginning in 2017. Listing agent Melanie Jones said the house went under contract in just 3 days. There aren't a lot of homes like this on a perfect street, she said. Holly Springs launches new ride service. An on-demand electric ride service is open in Holly Springs. The Holly Springs Hopper is operated by Freebie, a service that began in Florida and is growing. According to the town, people can book rides through the app or by calling in a request and go anywhere within the service area. The service can help, for example, seniors without transportation or others in need of a relatively cheap lift. The service is available Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Our cover story this week, we're hot for hotels. The Triangle is seeing a rapid rise in trendy hotels coming to the market, but can they fill the rooms? Kate Tracy is a reporter on this story. On an empty lot in front of the Martin Marietta Center for the Performing Arts, fencing is up and site work has begun on a hotel that will transform downtown Raleigh's hospitality industry. Omni Hotels and Resorts broke ground this month on a 600-room hotel that will open in the fourth quarter of 2028. The hotel is intentionally designed to be a place where locals and guests alike can linger over a coffee or a drink from the bar, have meetings, or just relax. We always say that we like to build our lobbies to be the living room of the community, said Brian Zellman, Vice President of Development at Omni Hotels and Resorts. The City of Raleigh is contributing $75 million to the Omni from bond proceeds. The 29-story hotel also has a lease in place with the city for $75,000 per year for the next 99 years. Zellman said the $360 million project first took root in 2018. He said Raleigh checked plenty of boxes for the Dallas-based hotel operator. It's a capital city with a diverse economy and a big talent pool fed by the universities. The Raleigh Omni will join Charlotte and Asheville properties as the chain's third North Carolina hotel. Omni will operate a sports bar with a simulator bay for golf and other active sports, as well as a coffee shop and a Bob's Steak and Chop House. The hotel also has 60,000 square feet of meeting space, including a 10,000 square foot junior ballroom and a 20,000 square foot grand ballroom. The fifth floor pool deck will also have a full service restaurant. Food and beverage and culinary is a huge emphasis for us and one of our competitive advantages, so we over-program from a food and beverage standpoint, Zellman said. We have a ton of restaurants in here. It's aimed at creating an incredible guest experience, but giving the locals something to do and something kind to enjoy as a big community asset. With the entrance of the Omni, the Triangle is entering a new era of hospitality, one with flashy amenities and welcoming gathering spots for guests and locals alike. The Page Moor, which broke ground in Cary's Fenton in September, will have a culinary theater for cooking and culinary classes, in addition to a lobby bar, coffee shop, and a Mediterranean restaurant. That's just one example of the amenity-rich hotels coming soon as the region booms with trendy rooftop hotel bars, beautiful lobbies, and ground floor restaurants. But questions remain. Can the Triangle fill these hotels, and how stiff is the competition going to be once they open? Despite being higher than the national and state averages, hotel occupancy in the Triangle decreased by 2.1% from 2024 to 2025, according to CoStar. Chantal Wu, Senior Director of Hospitality Market Analytics at CoStar, said increased competition from new hotels contributed to that decline in occupancy. Demand declined by 7%, partly due to big events like the U.S. Open Golf Tournament in 2024 that did not repeat in 2025, as well as record attendance at 2024's GalaxyCon, plus the Raleigh Convention Center's fire and subsequent closure in December contributed to a lack of hotel stays downtown last year. The Triangle currently has at least 14 hotels under construction that will bring 2,238 hotel rooms to the region. That represents approximately 7% of the existing inventory. The surge in construction here is far higher than in the rest of the country, where new hotel construction represents 2.3% of the nation's total inventory, Wu said. With the overall population growth of the Triangle, it makes sense that developers are flocking to the area. At the same time, it does really give more competition for existing hotel operators, and they just have to think about how they compete with new hotels coming online, Wu said. Maybe they have to reduce the rate, or maybe they have to think about other strategies. So it's two ends of the spectrum, depending on what role you play in this whole cycle. Downtown Raleigh has 3,300 hotel rooms, which accounts for about 10% of the overall Triangle hotel market. That's 31,700 rooms, according to CoStar. The Triangle's market revenue per available room declined by 0.8% from 2024 to 2025 to $87.81. WOO projects that decline to be 3.9% this year. The majority of that decline is going to come from a loss in occupancy because we continue to see this increase in supply, increase in competition, forcing local existing hotel operators to either slash rates or they just have to react to this new wave of new hotels coming into the market, Wu said. But Raleigh and the Triangle overall are dodging one headwind, and that the market relies on corporate and convention travel, so the decline in international travel is not hitting as hard as other international gateways like Miami or other Florida markets, where international travel is down 15%. Raleigh's not even close, Wu said. Zellman said lodging stats on the Raleigh market are encouraging and thinks the Omni's presence will only benefit other hotels in downtown Raleigh, especially with the expanded convention center's ability to land more convention business. With Omni bringing an elevated hotel option to downtown, I think that should be a windfall for all hotels in the downtown market, he said. He's expecting a healthy mix of convention travelers as well as other business and leisure travelers, and Omni is not done with North Carolina either. We certainly are not closing the door to further development in North Carolina, Zellman said. Joining the Omni are a collection of other hotels in the works in downtown Raleigh. Tidal Real Estate has tapped Denver-based Sage Hospitality to operate a Hotel Indigo in the former Round Holiday Inn, complete with a top-floor restaurant. At the adjacent lot, Tidal has proposed a second 13-story hotel right next to the future Hotel Indigo at 300 Hillsborough Street. Loudoun Development is planning a $75 million development in the Warehouse District that includes an 8-story, 170-room hotel. Loudoun is partnering with Washington, D.C.-based TBC Hotels on the project, expected to complete construction in 2028. Local architect Suhail Al-Awar is working on a boutique hotel at 423 South Blunt Street that's promising a more European modern aesthetic with 90 rooms. Marriott Town Place Suites is also under construction at 415 South Blunt Street and will bring 138 hotel rooms. Over on Hillsborough Street near NC State University, the city received early stage plans for a 7-story graduate hotel. Not every proposed hotel makes it out of the gate immediately, however. One example is a proposed hotel at 130 Kindley Street near the Mira Apartments. SFL plus A Architects submitted site plans for the hotel back in 2024, but architect Robert Ferris said he's still searching for a developer. Elsewhere in the Triangle, Dennis Edwards, president and CEO of the Greater Raleigh Convention and Visitors Bureau, projects 9 hotels will open in Wake County this year, adding about 1,200 rooms to the market. But there are still gaps that need to be filled, particularly in Holly Springs and Fuquay Varina, given the large presence of biotech companies there. A lot of those corporations not only need hotels, but they need conference space and meeting space as well. We just don't have anything in that area, Edwards said. One bright spot on the western side of the Triangle is the Tempo by Hilton Hotel that's in the works at Apex's Sweetwater Town Center. On the eastern side of the county, Wendell, Wake Forest, and Zebulon are also lacking in hotels. To combat the problem, Edwards hosted a speed dating event. Along with JLL and Wake County Economic Development, Edwards recently organized a hotel development summit that brought 35 developers from across the country to meet with 12 Wake County municipalities. The municipal leaders were prepared to pitch potential sites and to provide market analysis on the types of hotels they want. I was hoping for about 10 to 12 developers, so 35 was a really strong number, and it really shows the interest in this market, Edwards said. Another trend Edwards is seeing is the rise of mixed-use developments that come with hospitality. Edwards pointed to the Page Moore at Fenton, the Oberlin Hotel at Village District, and Hyatt House at Seaboard Station as examples. Kane Realty President John Kane said he's looking to bring a hotel to the Midline Raleigh site that Kane recently purchased as an extension of North Hills. Also, Edwards said Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon really wants to get a high-end hotel at the Lenovo Center as well, so those developments are really spurring growth for more hotel product. Edwards pointed to corporate development, airport expansion, and tourism infrastructure growth, the Lenovo Center and Raleigh Convention Center in particular, as good signs for new hotels. Those are all good indicators that people are very interested in traveling to this market, and there's obviously still going to be continued need for new hotel development, he said. Even with slowdown with occupancy, Edwards points to the diversity in the Triangle's travelers, namely a strong mix of business, sports, convention, and leisure travelers to keep the hospitality industry healthy. When one declines, like the leisure market right now, we still have other markets that can carry us through the tough times, he said. Even with the caliber of high-end hotels coming to the region, there are still brands notably missing, namely Ritz-Carlton and the Four Seasons. Something in that caliber, I think, would certainly do well, Edwards said. High-end luxury hotels nationwide are really performing better than any other market segment right now. Other hospitality experts are not so sure on timing for more hotels of five-star caliber. We're not yet at that level to where we can show that we can sustain the rates necessary to bring those types of properties to the market. We will get there. There's no question in my mind that we'll get there, said Russ Jones, president of Loden Hospitality. The Triangle is not without its highly lauded hotels. The Umstead Hotel and Spa consistently ranks number one in the state on U.S. News & World Report's annual rankings, beating out the Ballantine in Charlotte and the Inn on Biltmore Estate. The Farrington House in Pittsburgh and the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club are also highly ranked. For Robert O'Halloran, professor and director at Eastern Carolina University School of Hospitality Leadership, it's also a matter of time before the Ritz-Carlton or Four Seasons joins the mix. My guess is that those companies are probably looking at the Raleigh market, and they'll pick the time when that's going to make sense for them, O'Halloran said. Loden's Jones has helped create some of Raleigh's one-of-a-kind hospitality stays, the Longleaf Hotel and Guesthouse. I think for independent hotels, having a connection to the local community is really, really important. I'd say it's less important for the branded properties, Jones said, although the franchise owners of branded hotels and their workers are local. Jones points to the Durham Hotel as having a lobby that's gotten it right in terms of appealing to locals. Longleaf's Lounge has also become a popular hangout spot for locals as well. Jones has a new hotel project in Durham, but he declined to share any more details on it. Building and developing all types of real estate is more challenging than ever and takes a ton of conviction. So I'm rooting for all the projects that are in planning because I know how much conviction it takes to get it done, and I want to see them all happen, Jones said. Jones said the hotel industry was a bit caught off guard by the drop in occupancy last year, but he's still optimistic for 2026. Years like that are wonderful opportunities to really focus on the operation and hone in on your craft. Figure out where you can improve your own operation so that you're not really hurt by that, Jones said. The winter weather in January hurt business travel last month. We're already reorganizing and thinking about how to shift some of our strategies. I think it's just human nature. You go through a down year and you think, I'm going to be better prepared for whatever's coming, he said. Loden's branded hotels, the Hampton Inn and Suites in Raleigh's Midtown, and a loft in downtown Durham, have done better in terms of occupancy than the Longleaf Hotel and Guesthouse. In 5 years, hotels will completely remake downtown Raleigh, but residents won't be seeing a whole lot of action this year. The big game is about to start, but we're not here yet, Jones said. Let's turn now to the reporter pages. The first one this week is Greater Triangle, written by Ben Tobin. In Lee County, project secures key component. One of the largest housing developments in the region has secured a key component, sewer capacity. The Sanford City Council voted recently to enter into a development agreement with Canadian homebuilder Matney Homes to extend sewer infrastructure for the company's Vermilion neighborhood, which calls for more than 1,200 homes at full build-out. The city council voted in August to approve the annexation and rezoning of a 488-acre site near the intersection of Colon and Riddle Roads northeast of town to pave the way for the project. According to the development agreement, due to its location, the neighborhood would place a strain on pre-existing sewage infrastructure operated by the city of Sanford. Under this new agreement, the city will work on $6.7 million worth of improvements that will increase sewer capacity by 4,870 homes. In turn, Matney Homes will pay the city $1,376 per lot. Bob Wiggins, Raleigh Division President for Matney Homes, told Triangle Business Journal after the meeting that the agreement outlines mutually beneficial partnership under which the City of Sanford and the Tri-River Water Authority will provide water and sewer capacity to support the Vermilion community. Tri-River is Sanford's water utility. As part of the agreement, Matney Homes will contribute funds to a Tri-River account that will be used in the future to improve and enhance the downstream sewer system serving Vermilion and the broader regional service basin, Wiggins said. All infrastructure costs within the project boundary, as well as the connection to the existing downstream sewer system, will be fully borne by Matney Homes. Tri-River has gradually become a local water kingpin through agreements to provide water and sewer infrastructure to neighboring Chatham County and its municipalities of Pittsboro and Siler City. The U.S. 1 corridor has been growing fast for years, driving a major housing boom in Lee County. In Brunswick County, another 525 homes are planned for this coastal county. After approving thousands of housing units last year, North Carolina's fastest-growing county has paved the way for another large subdivision. The Brunswick County Planning Board voted this month to approve a planned development on 408 acres off Old Georgetown Road near Ocean Isle Beach in the far southern portion of the county. The community called LaDaine Gardens will have 525 single-family homes with a density of about 1.29 units per acre. Pennsylvania home builder Toll Brothers is the builder for the project. Tyler Baker, a representative for Toll Brothers, said during the planning board meeting that the project will be built out over five phases. We're scheduled to break ground in 2027 with this site, and then each phase is going to be 8 to 10 months of development, he told the board. At another Toll Brothers subdivision, Ocean Isle Palms in Shalote, homes started around $450,000. In Granville County, health system grows with $2.7 million acquisition. A health system north of Durham has made a multi-million dollar real estate purchase. Granville Health System paid $2.65 million to acquire the building at 103 Professional Park Drive in Oxford, which houses several specialists for the health system. The building is just south of the Granville Hospital. The seller is Chapel Hill's Morris Commercial. According to Adam McConnell, CEO of Granville Health System, the group has utilized the property at 103 Professional Park Drive for a number of years under a lease. The recent purchase of the property adjacent to the hospital campus supports long-term stability and planning for the health system and the community we serve, McConnell said. In Chatham County, moratorium declared on data center projects. Chatham County is blocking data center projects for a year, even as local developers say multiple sites have drawn interest for investments. The Chatham County Board of Commissioners voted recently to enact a 12-month moratorium on the permitting of data centers, data processing facilities, cryptocurrency mining operations, and any other associated uses, according to Board Chair Amanda Robertson. It runs through February 11th. Several speakers at the meeting opposed the moratorium. Kirk Bradley, CEO of Lee Moore Capital and manager of EchoTip West, LLC, said data centers are going to happen, whether in Chatham or not, and I would ask that you find the balance in your unified development ordinance changes that allow this unprecedented economic development opportunity to come to Chatham and benefit its citizens. Michael Smith, president of the Chatham Economic Development Corp., said several sites in the county have received interest from data center operators. He said he respects the board's decision, noting that projects like this raise important questions about infrastructure capacity, environmental impact, and long-term fit, and it is appropriate for them to be carefully studied. Reporter Lauren Onosorge is here with the news on technology and transportation. a startup snags backing from Kia. In a nondescript industrial building on Morrisville's Aviation Drive, a new way of manufacturing is taking shape. That's how Maria Incher-Aurang, co-founder of Simply Fiber, describes it. A mess of fibers that are pulled into a machine and molded into everything from shoes to vehicle door panels. Now it is at a pivotal moment. Quietly, the startup that relocated to Morrisville a year ago is drawing interest from major players in industries. Incher-Aurang, whose background is in fashion, never expected. Auto company Kia, for example, reached out to her team, sparking a collaboration that has pulled Simply Fiber in an entirely new direction. Kia is the first automobile company to apply Simply Fiber's cellulose-based material, fibrin, in vehicle design. The material, made from materials such as wood and paper, is all manufactured in Morrisville. The shaped material is then sent to Kia manufacturing facilities. Founded in 2021, Simply Fiber recently expanded into a larger space. Now it's preparing to scale. Simply Fiber employs just under 20 people and now operates out of a 20,000-square-foot facility off Aviation Boulevard. The expansion was driven by the installation of a massive new machine, a major upgrade from the assortment of equipment the team once used to transform its fibers. For Incher-Aurang, the pace has been dizzying. Every 2 weeks, she said, it feels like 3 months. Innovation is moving that quickly. She joined up with Cohen, a Nashville, Tennessee tech entrepreneur, and together they pushed the work further, teaming up with a contract lab in Canada to test a range of approaches. After a year of tinkering, they developed a material they called G, the letter G. It was so pretty and strong, and I think that was the beginning of when we realized we could actually make something, she said. Construction on Western Boulevard to end soon. Well, that's good to hear. A long-running effort to ease traffic along Interstate 440 is inching toward completion. The widening of Western Boulevard, set to be completed this summer, is part of the $368 million update to I-440 in West Raleigh that started in 2019. In 2021, the Triangle's first diverging diamond interchange opened at Western Boulevard, and I-440 is part of the work. At the time, the entire project was scheduled to be complete in 2023, but issues have plagued the project, from weather to contractor delays. Just recently, a ramp closure was placed to relocate a water line. That will allow crews to install drainage installation and complete road construction. Kim Diener, a spokesperson for the NC Department of Transportation, said a series of upcoming traffic shifts is necessary to complete the remaining drainage work and widening, as well as to establish new travel lanes and set the final traffic pattern. Crews will also add a sidewalk. RDU makes early morning alcohol sales permanent. Pre-dawn cocktails are now a permanent fixture at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority Board recently voted unanimously to allow for alcohol sales to begin as early as 4 a.m. The move was made possible by a recent change in state law to eliminate time restrictions on alcohol sales at airports. In September, RDU started a pilot program where it explored selling alcoholic beverages as soon as the restaurant opens. Hunter Bond, director of lease management for concessions at RDU, said the move resulted in a 7.5% increase in alcohol sales between the early hours of 4 a.m. and 7 a.m. But notably, alcohol-related cases involving rowdy travelers did not increase. Tweener Fund's reach is now statewide. The Triangle Tweener Fund has a new anchor investor that brings statewide reach. NC IDEA, the private entrepreneurial support organization based in Durham, has signed a $4 million deal to anchor what is now the NC Tweener Fund. The fund will continue using the index-style co-investment model, but instead of concentrating in the Triangle, it will now operate statewide. Tom Rue, president and CEO of NC IDEA, said his team had been exploring ways to deploy more capital directly. Maybe it's time for NC IDEA to start its own fund, he remembers thinking. Then he invited serial entrepreneur Scott Wingo onto a podcast. Wingo launched the Tweener Fund in 2022. During the podcast recording, Wingo mentioned that he and his Tweener Fund partner, Robbie Allen, were looking for a way to go bigger. One of my colleagues heard a statement, Rue recalls. Maybe we should approach them. The partnership followed. The fund's index strategy has it writing a high volume of checks, often landing it on lists of the most active investors. Of roughly 300 local companies Wingo identifies as tweeners, firms between pre-seed and scale-up, the fund has already invested in 167. Turning now to the real estate and development page, brought to us by Kaylee Thompson. North Hills to add apartments. The North Hills growth streak is adding more buildings as Kane Realty Corp. continues to reshape and expand the district. The Raleigh developer has started construction on Tributary, a mixed-use residential building adjacent to Tower 5 in the North Hills Innovation District. The six-story building will have 332 apartments, 5,988 square feet of retail space, and a 389-space garage, according to a press release. Approved site plans show there will be 281-bedroom units, with the rest being two-bedroom and three-bedroom units. Tributary is one of three additional buildings planned for the North Hills Innovation District, which runs along St. Albans Drive. The expansion is part of a sweeping transformation of the Midtown area. Next door is the Exchange Raleigh project led by DeWitt Carolinas, and Kane's remake of the North Hills Main District is advancing following rezoning approval to allow more high-rise buildings. The retail space at Tributary will be one suite along the extension of Hardiman Road. Site plans show restaurant signage for that space. Amenities at Tributary will include two outdoor courtyards, a swimming pool, outdoor lounging, pet spa, bicycle storage, and more. Kane Realty expects to deliver the project in spring of 2028. For Tributary, Hickok Cole is serving as the architect, McAdams is the civil engineer, and John Moriarty and Associates is the general contractor. The property for Tributary between the 17-story Tower 5 and the midline Raleigh site that Kane acquired in January will also hold a high-rise residential building with a rooftop pool and club room and mixed-use building that will either be a hotel, residential, or office space. The midline Raleigh site will be an expansion of the Innovation District Kane Realty is planning, a hotel, and mixed-use residential buildings. In North Raleigh, investor bets $16 million on Six Forks office space. A collection of office buildings in North Raleigh has been acquired by a local investor. Stevens Enterprises acquired the Midtown North office buildings at the intersection of Six Forks and Lynn Roads for $16 million per Wake County deed records. The five buildings combined total approximately 82,000 square feet. Stevens Enterprises bought the portfolio from Barrister Commercial Group of Louisville, Kentucky. Barrister paid $8.2 million for the property in 2025. Matthew Stevens said his Raleigh company used some of the proceeds from a recent $20 million land sale in Durham to purchase the buildings. He added that the property is a great opportunity in a prime location. Cary developer wins zoning for Durham Homes. A Cary developer has secured approval for a mixed-use project with hundreds of homes north of Research Triangle Park. The Durham City Council recently voted unanimously to rezone 75 acres between South Miami Boulevard and Interstate 885 to plan development residential from Residential Suburban 20. The CSC group's plan calls for up to 630 apartments, townhomes, and duplexes, and 9,500 square feet of commercial space. Of the residential units, at least 220 must be apartments, 200 must be townhomes, and at least 63 will be duplexes. In 2024, the council rejected the developer's rezoning request because the initial plan called for a single-use project on the site. In October 2024, CSC Group came back with a different proposal. It added acreage, more units, a variety of housing types, and commercial space. CSC President Steve George said the company made the changes based on feedback from council and city staff. In Midtown Raleigh, empty warehouse fills up near Ironworks. An empty warehouse adjacent to Raleigh Ironworks is now fully leased as the energy in Midtown continues to build. Georgia-based Courier Express signed a lease for 62,815 square feet at 2319 Atlantic Avenue, which is across the street from Raleigh Ironworks and Salvage Yard. Courier Express will be the sole tenant of the warehouse that has been empty since CES Mail Communications vacated the building at the end of 2024. A release from Grubb Ventures stated the lease is an expansion for the company. Courier Express has a 73,000-square-foot warehouse in Morrisville near Davis Drive, just outside Racers Triangle Park. The warehouse has 18-foot clear heights and 7 dock-high doors. It was built in 1968 and sits on 2.36 acres. It's assessed at $6.7 million. As development continues to push these uses farther from the urban core, centrally located and adaptable assets like this, especially those within districts like Raleigh Iron Works, are becoming increasingly valuable, said Joe Dye, director of commercial at Grubb Ventures. Raleigh Iron Works is 98% leased on the office side with the recent DraftKings lease. Beacon Partners is doubling down on its investments in the area with plans for a 342-unit apartment project and the acquisition of Dock 1053. Turning now to the Healthcare and Life Sciences page, written by Zach Ezone. In Johnston County, UNC Health looks to expand. As work gets underway on UNC Health's $100 million expansion in Johnston County, the health system is eyeing more investments in its medical centers in Clayton and Smithfield. UNC Health Johnston has filed two applications to add 63 acute care beds across its facilities. The proposal builds on the health system's 2024 approval to develop 24 beds, split evenly between the two campuses. UNC Health Johnston filed applications this month with the NC Department of Health and Human Services in response to the 2026 State Medical Facilities Plan, which identified a need for 63 beds in Johnston County. No competing applications were filed. Under the proposals, UNC Health Johnston would add 35 beds in Clayton and 28 beds in Smithfield. The expansion would grow the health system to 118 beds in Clayton and 151 beds in Smithfield. Tommy Williams, CEO of UNC Health Johnston, said splitting the beds between two applications is the best plan to totally serve the county, where it would help people not to travel a greater distance for care and for inpatient beds. In Clayton, the health system is developing a three-story building with construction likely beginning by April. Under the earlier approval, the health system planned to develop 12 acute care beds on the building's second floor, along with 12 observation beds that could later be converted to licensed beds. In its newest application, the health system proposes converting the 12 observation beds into acute care beds, building out the third floor, and adding 4 postpartum beds on the first floor. In its recent applications, UNC Health Johnston proposes 2 additions to a hospital in Smithfield that will require 54,616 total square feet of construction. The health system plans to add 24 general beds and 4 intensive care unit beds to the hospital. New BioCryst CEO seeks next major drug. After helping put BioCryst Pharmaceuticals on the path toward a $1 billion drug, Charlie Gayer has now become CEO. The transition became official in January, but had been building for some time. John Stonehouse, who led the company for nearly 20 years, informed the board 3 or 4 years ago about his intention to retire, Gayer said. The company initiated a transition process, which led BioCryst to announce last summer that Stonehouse would retire at the end of 2025, and Gayer would take over as CEO at the start of this year. Gayer said he never sought out becoming CEO, but it's a role he was prepared for based on his previous post at the company. He joined BioCryst in 2015 and became chief commercial officer in 2020, leading the rollout of BioCryst's lead product, Orladeyo. Orladeyo generated $601 million in net revenue last year, according to preliminary numbers from January. Under pressure, Duke cuts ties with nonprofit. Amid ongoing pressure from the Trump administration, Duke University has agreed to end its partnership with a nonprofit aimed at increasing diversity among business school faculty. The Department of Education announced recently that 31 universities, including Duke, would drop the PhD project. The department said the universities have also agreed to review their partnerships with other organizations to identify any that may violate Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. The Trump administration launched multiple investigations into Duke last year. Federal officials informed the university in July that both its medical school and the Duke Law Journal were being investigated over allegations the school violated the Civil Rights Act. 1063 Therapeutics raises $22 million. A Research Triangle Park company has raised more than $22 million to develop treatments for diseases that have stumped conventional drug development. The funding brings 1063 Therapeutics' total investment since forming out of Duke University to more than $45 million. The funding will support 1063 in scaling its AI-driven drug discovery platform known as Beyond. New investors include the Gates Foundation and Chugai Venture Fund, a subsidiary of Japan-based Chugai Pharmaceuticals. They invested alongside other new backers, Rise, that's R-Y-S-E, K5 Global, SF Holdings, Duke Capital Partners, Cape Fear BioCapital, Black Opal Ventures, and Panorama. The raise, which follows a $16 million Series A round in 2023, was driven by new progress with the company's drug discovery platform. CEO Marcel Frankel said the company is not yet publicly disclosing full details of these results. One thing that we were able to achieve is a breakthrough in the ability to simulate systems at quantum physical level of accuracy that are big enough to be used for drug discovery, Frankel said. The promise of that, obviously, is the ability to overcome any data limitation toward being able to pursue targets that you know have so far been undruggable. Now, that's a word I've never heard before, undruggable. Kate Tracy brings us the latest in the professional services and retail sector. Law firm to take space in I-40 Tower. The leasing spree continues at a landmark office tower undergoing a $10 million facelift as the flight to quality reshapes the Triangle office market. Charlotte-based law firm Robinson Bradshaw has signed a 30,905-square-foot lease for a full floor at the 11-story Imperial Tower at 4320 Emperor Boulevard off Page Road at Interstate 40 in Durham. The lease rounds out a trio of office deals in the past 90 days for more than half of the 260,000-square-foot building. Robinson Bradshaw joins Verizon retailer Victra and Aspida Financial at the former IQVIA Tower. The law firm will take the third floor at Drawbridge Realty's Imperial Tower and plans to move in during second quarter of 2027. Glenn Kaplan, partner at Robinson Bradshaw, said the move will consolidate the firm's offices in downtown Raleigh and Chapel Hill with room to grow. For us, it comes down to centrality to our clients and also from a recruiting perspective. We think a central location makes living in all areas of the Triangle accessible, Kaplan said. The office will be larger than the firm's current Triangle footprint, which consists of approximately 21,000 square feet in Chapel Hill and 5,000 square feet in Raleigh at the Truist building on Fayetteville Street. Amenities played a big role in the decision to move. Drawbridge Realty is adding a fitness wing, golf simulator, a cafe, and other upgrades to the building. Outside, the landlord is transforming a parking lot into pickleball courts, basketball courts, and a soccer field. We like the idea of our employees having a building where they have access to a fitness facility. We have access to shared conference space that's pretty large capacity to allow us to host client events if we choose to do so, Kaplan said. The new office has a capacity for 51 attorneys, Kaplan said. Fitness giant muscles into South Raleigh. Planet Fitness has another Raleigh location in the works in the Triangle. The fitness giant is eyeing a shopping center on South Wilmington Street, south of downtown near Tryon Road, a spokesperson for the gym confirmed. A specific opening date has not been announced. The location marks the third Raleigh location that Planet Fitness has added in recent months. The other two are former Big Lots locations at 3924 Western Boulevard and 6560 Glenwood Avenue in the Town Ridge Shopping Center. The newest location is in the Chapinoak Square Retail Center. A Planet Fitness gym in Durham recently opened as well at a location at 4723 NC Highway 55. The fitness and gym industry has grown to become a more than $40 billion business in the U.S. The Triangle, particularly Raleigh, has seen a host of fitness spaces open over the past year, from national chains to local entrepreneurs. Planet Fitness, headquartered in New Hampshire, opened 181 new locations in 2025, 152 of those being franchise locations. Nearly 21 million people are members of Planet Fitness, and sales increased by 6.7% last year, according to the company. Planet Fitness lists 19 locations in the region, including one in Clayton and one in Hillsboro. Classic membership costs $15 per month at Planet Fitness. And finally, in Midtown Raleigh, East End Market Lands Cocktail Bar and Cafe. Meg Paradise is bringing back the booze with her latest venture. Paradise, founder of Raleigh's Umbrella Dry Bar, is opening Songbird, an all-day cafe and cocktail bar, this June at 1020 East Whittaker Mill Road, Suite 130, in East End Market in Midtown. She's joined by hospitality veteran Charlie Blue Arm, who's a co-owner in the venue. The pair is renovating an 800-square-foot former garage at East End Market to create an intimate cafe and bar with extensive outdoor seating. "We looked at pretty much every opportunity you could think of," Blue Arm said of the search for Songbird's location. Ultimately, they landed on East End Market and a small space because of its ample parking, among other factors. The owners liked the idea of paying less rent but still having outdoor space. They've designed a walk-up window for outside ordering. "We're really trying to be smart about how we're approaching it," Paradise said. Paradise founded Umbrella Dry Bar in 2021 and opened a physical space in downtown Raleigh that closed after a short run. Paradise learned that the business was more suited as a mobile bar for events. In addition, Umbrella Dry Bar still functions as a bottle shop at 12 West Martin Street inside the self-care marketplace. This week's executive voice spotlight lands on Mike Smith. He's the CEO of Kane Realty Corp. When Mike Smith moved from investment banking to real estate development, it was because he wanted to have the chance to build something that had a tangible impact on a community. In 2001, he was craving an opportunity that was the opposite of the finance world. He found that in a small team that was comprised of himself, John Kane, and two others in the basement of the old North Hills Mall. Their first project, a $100 million development that became the beginning of the North Hills Main District, the Target, Regal Theater, retail buildings, and two levels of parking under the retail buildings. It was trying to find capital and trying to find tenants and manage a $100 million construction project, which was something we had never done before, he said. It was all we worked on, and we worked on it all the time. The initial stage opened in 2004, the same time Smith was promoted to president of Kane Realty. 20 years and billions of dollars worth of commercial real estate projects later, he was named CEO. And the TBJ asked, what will 2026 look like for CRE? "For all practical purposes, we have been in a real estate recession the last 3.5 years. The outlook where we sit today seems much more optimistic than it has been. Feels like the stability of keeping up with what was some volatile changes in interest rates seems to be absorbed by the capital markets. Now we've had rates going down and anticipating likely a couple more cuts. And the debt market seems attracted to real estate. It feels like they're definitely back in the game. It's all about getting the income up high enough relative to the cost basis in development, and we've had several deals that have closed in the last year and see opportunity for several more of those to happen this year and more into 2027. What's on tap for Kane Realty? We have quite a strong pipeline, lots of different projects that we're working on. We do see one or two more residential projects happening in North Hills, the same in the Dix Park downtown area. We just broke ground with the capital close on Tributary at North Hills Innovation District that closed a few weeks ago, and so that is coming out of the ground. We're still significantly under construction with Strand, which is a high-rise 17-story residential building in North Hills. Also under construction with Oldham and Worth, which is the Phase 2 there in the West End next to Platform. We do see a Phase 2 of the Roe Rockway with a project called Heath that will be coming out of the ground later this year. Oldham and Worth should be opening up this year. What are you hearing from banks on financing? What we're hearing is that there's an appetite that the banks are definitely open for business, and it's all about matching with the location, the project, and the sponsor. In our marketplace, the greater Raleigh area is very attractive, and the sponsorships that are available to most of these lenders, they seem to be very comfortable with. What does your day look like? The most exciting part is the opportunity to interact with over 300 employees. We are a values-based organization and take a lot of pride and comfort in the culture of our organization, and just spending time with our team and trying to make sure they have what they need so that they can feel empowered and have the resources so that they can be successful is how I primarily spend my time. What's a favorite project? We've been really thoughtful in where we're putting parks and parklets and pulling the buildings back to create green spaces. When we're doing that, it's what is the activation of those? There's a lot of that naturally happens, but what can we do to help bring those on? That part really fills me up. Kaylee Thompson is the reporter who interviewed Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith is 59 years old. He's been married for 30 years and has three adult children. In the viewpoint section, we have a guest column this week from frequent contributor John Hood. This is about fiscal policy. North Carolina shouldn't rest on its laurels. In the most recent 12-month period, North Carolina's economy expanded by an inflation-adjusted 3%. Among the 50 states, only South Carolina, at 3.5%, posted a significantly faster growth rate. North Carolina also continues to top CNBC's ranking of the best states for business. Wonderful news, but we can't afford to be complacent. Despite our recent growth spurt, too many North Carolinians still struggle to achieve the American dream. We owe it to them to make our state an even more attractive place to live, work, invest, and create new jobs. Besides, as Southwest Airlines co-founder Herb Kelleher so memorably put it, if you rest on your laurels, you'll get a thorn in your butt. Fortunately, my colleagues at the John Locke Foundation have just offered a plan to keep the state moving forward. Its latest North Carolina Policy Solutions booklet contains dozens of proposed changes to the state's fiscal and regulatory policies, education and legal systems, public assistance programs, health care and transportation markets, and other critical institutions. Five of its recommendations in particular would enhance our state's already impressive business climate. Reform North Carolina's tax code to immediately expense business investment, exclude long-term capital gains from taxable income, and index the standard deduction for inflation. We should finance public services with flat, broadly applied rates on consumed income while shielding saved income from double taxation. Improve state government's financial position by maintaining budget discipline, consolidating state facilities, maintaining the rest with annual appropriations for repairs and renovations, and saving more money for future pension and retiree health benefits. North Carolina's relatively low indebtedness has served us well. Refine North Carolina's strategic transportation investment plan formula to include the total lifetime cost of roads, bridges, and other assets, and the anticipated effects on traffic congestion. We can't afford to spend precious resources on low-priority projects. Strengthen academic standards and testing programs in North Carolina's public schools while expanding career and technical education, helping teachers and students use artificial intelligence wisely, and giving local schools and districts more control over teacher compensation and other expenditures. Reduce healthcare costs in North Carolina by removing constraints on hospital competition, direct primary care, telehealth, and patient care by advanced practice nurses. Other states with wiser regulatory policies have lower medical prices than we do. Having looked carefully at the empirical evidence on economic growth, Locke Foundation analysts concluded it cannot simply be purchased by spending more tax dollars on either public programs or corporate subsidies. A government can both hinder economic performance by imposing high tax burdens or costly regulatory delays, and help it by ensuring the effective provisions of high-quality services such as public safety, education, and transportation. The starting premise behind policies to promote economic growth, the authors wrote, is that private entrepreneurs using their own money or the money of voluntary investors are best situated to know how to allocate resources efficiently. North Carolina already has a welcoming business climate. Let's make it even better. John Hood is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh, and if you care to reach him, you can email him at jhood, J-H-O-O-D, at John Locke, John L-O-C-K-E, .org. Breeze Airways adds two new flights to RDU lineup. Article by Lauren Onasorge. Raleigh-Durham International Airport's fastest-growing airline is once again adding flights to destinations not currently on RDU's map. Breeze Airways is adding nonstop flights to Birmingham, Alabama, and Tallahassee, Florida, starting just in time for the July 4th weekend. The Birmingham route will run on Mondays and Fridays. Tallahassee runs Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. Lucas Johnson, chief commercial officer at Breeze Airways, said the news shouldn't be a surprise to those following RDU's momentum. Raleigh continues to be a great market, and Birmingham and Tallahassee are both unserved markets that have really high fares, he said. Competition often brings down ticket prices, but Breeze in particular is what's known as an ultra-low-cost airline. Passengers pay a streamlined price starting at $49 and $39 for Birmingham and Tallahassee, respectively. They can then pay extra to opt in for additions like checked bags and seat assignments. It's a model that has been growing at RDU, which has long been dominated by legacy airlines such as Delta Airlines and American Airlines. Over the past several years, Breeze and airlines like it, including Avelo, Frontier, and Spirit, have been adding service at RDU, taking advantage of gaps in the network. Breeze's executives say their focus is not just on price, but on helping travelers avoid congested hubs. Their flights primarily take travelers to smaller connections, such as near major metros like New Haven, Connecticut, as a way of bypassing Boston Logan to access New England. As Breeze has expanded, another new budget carrier, Avelo Airlines, has scaled back at RDU. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.